If you are a dreamer, come in. If you are a dreamer, a wisher, a liar, a hoper, a prayer, a magic bean buyer, if you're a pretender, come, sit by my fire. For we have some flax golden tales to spin. Come in. Come in. 18 luscious, scrumptious flavors, chocolate, lime, and cherry. Coffee, pumpkin, fudge, banana, caramel, cream, and boysenberry. Rocky road, toasted almond, butterscotch, vanilla dip, butter, brittle, apple, ripple, coconut, and mocha chip, brandy, peach, and lemon custard. Each scoop lovely, smooth, and round. Tallest ice cream cone in town. Lying there on the ground. Have you heard of tiny Melinda May, who ate a monstrous whale? She thought she could, she said she would, so she started in right at the tail. And everyone said, "You're much too small," but that didn't bother Melinda at all. She took little bites and she chewed very slow, just like a good girl should. And in 89 years, she ate a whale, because she said she would.
"I cannot go to school today,"
said little Peggy Ann McKay.
"I have the measles and the mumps, a gash, a rash, and purple bumps. My mouth is wet, my throat is dry. I'm going blind in my right eye. My tonsils are as big as rocks. I've counted 16 chicken pox, and there's one more, that's 17. And don't you think my face looks green? My leg is cut, my eyes are blue. It might be instamatic flu. I cough and sneeze and gasp and choke. I'm sure my left leg is broke. My hip hurts when I move my chin. My belly button's caving in. My back is wrenched, my ankle sprained. My appendix pains each time it rains. My nose is cold, my toes are numb. I have a sliver in my thumb. My neck is stiff, my spine is weak. I hardly whisper when I speak. My tongue is filling up my mouth. I think my hair is falling out. My elbows bent, my spine ain't straight. My temperature is 108. My brain is shrunk, I cannot hear. There is a hole inside my ear. I have a hangnail, and my heart is..."
"What? What's that? What's that you say?"
"You say today is Saturday."
"Goodbye.
I'm going out to play." Hickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Went for a ride in a flying shoe. Hooray! What fun! It's time we flew. Said hickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Hickle was captain, and Pickle was crew, and Tickle served coffee and mulligan stew. As higher and higher and higher they flew. Hickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Hickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Over the sun and up into the blue. Hold on, stay in, I hope that we do. Cried hickle me, tickle me too. Hickle me, pickle me, tickle me too. Never returned to the world they knew, and nobody knows just what's happened to dear Hickle Me, Pickle Me. Tickle me too. Enter this deserted house, but please walk softly as you do. Frogs dwell here, and crickets too. Ain't no ceiling, only blue. Jays dwell here, and sunbeams too. Floors are flowers, take a few. Ferns grow here, and daisies too. Bats dwell here, and hoot owls too. Gnomes dwell here, and goblins too. Oh, my child, I thought you knew. I dwell here, and so do you. I'll tell you the story of Jimmy Jett, and you know what I tell you is true. He loved to watch his TV set almost as much as you. He watched all day, he watched all night, till he grew pale and lean from the early show to the late, late show, and all the shows between. He watched till his eyes were frozen wide, and his bottom grew into his chair, and his chin turned into a tuning dial, and antenna grew out of his hair, and his brains turned into TV tubes, and his face to a TV screen, and two knobs saying vert and horiz grew where his ears had been. And he grew a plug that looked like a tail. So we plugged in little Jim. And now, instead of him watching TV, we all sit around and watch him.
One sister for sale. One sister for sale. One crying and spying young sister for sale. I'm really not kidding, so who'll start the bidding? Do I hear a dollar? A nickel? A penny? Oh, come on, isn't there any one kid who will buy this old sister for sale? This crying and spying young sister for sale? Do I hear anything?
Okay. I'll keep it till next Wednesday. Inside of everybody's nose, there lives a sharp-toothed snail. So, if you stick your finger in, he may bite off your nail. Stick it further up inside, and he might bite your ring off. Stick it all the way, and he might bite the whole darn thing off. So, that's why always use your handkerchief. That's right. You just take your handkerchief, wrap it around your finger, and jam it up in there. Okay. In the swamplands long ago, where the weeds and muggaglumps grow, a yippee-yuck bit on my toe. Exactly why, I do not know. I kicked. I cried. I hollered, oh! The yippee-yuck would not let go. I whispered to it soft and low. Come on, come on. The yippee-yuck would not let go. I shouted, stop! Desist! And whoa! The yippee-yuck would not let go. And that was 16 years ago. The yippee-yuck still won't let go. The snow may fall, the winds may blow. The yippee-yuck will not let go. The snow may melt, the grass may grow. The yippee-yuck will not let go. I drag him round each place. place I go, this yippy-yuck that won't let go. And now, my child, at last you know exactly why I walk so slow. Oh, the crocodile went to the dentist, and he sat down in the chair. And the dentist said, "Now tell me, sir, why does it hurt and where?" And the crocodile said, "I'll tell you the truth, I've a terrible, terrible ache on my tooth." And he opened his jaws so wide, the dentist, he climbed right inside. The dentist laughed, "Oh, isn't this fun?" as he pulled the teeth out, one by one. And the crocodile cried, "You're hurting me so, please put down your pliers and let me go." But the dentist just laughed with a ho, ho, ho. He said, "I still have 12 to go. Oops, that's the wrong one, I confess. But what's one crocodile tooth more or less?" And then suddenly the jaws went snap, and the dentist was gone, right off the map. And where he went, no one could guess. To north, to south, to east, to west, he left no forwarding address. But what's one dentist more or less?
How do we tell if a window is open?
Just throw a stone at it. Does it make a noise? It doesn't? Well, it was open. Now let's try another. Well, that one wasn't. Now let's try another one. Her mama said, "Don't eat with your fingers."
"Okay," said Ridiculous Rose.
So, she ate with her toes.
Oh, I'm being eaten by a boa constrictor, a boa constrictor, a boa constrictor. I'm being eaten by a boa constrictor, and I don't like it one bit. Well, what do you know? It's nibbling my toe. Oh, gee. It's up to my knee. Oh, my. It's up to my thigh. Oh, fiddle. It's up to my middle. Oh, heck. It's up to my neck. Oh, dread. It's up to my...
I'll sing you a poem of a silly young king who played with the world at the end of a string, but he only loved one single thing, and that was just a peanut butter sandwich. His scepter and his royal gowns, his regal throne and golden crowns were all brown and sticky from the mounds and drippings from each peanut butter sandwich. His subjects all were silly fools, for he had passed a royal rule that all that they could learn in school was how to make a peanut butter sandwich. He would not eat his sovereign steak. No, mm-mm. He scorned his soup, take it away, and his kingly cake, and told his courtly cook to bake an extra sticky peanut butter sandwich. Mm.
And then, one day, he took a bite and started chewing with delight. But he found that his mouth was stuck quite tight from that last bite of peanut butter sandwich.
His brother pulled, his sister pried, the wizard pushed, his mother cried, my boy's committed suicide from eating that last peanut butter sandwich. The dentist came, and the royal duck, the royal plumber, banged, and knocked, but still those jaws stayed tightly locked. Oh, damn that sticky peanut butter sandwich. The carpenter, he tried with pliers. The telephone man tried with wires. The firemen, they tried with fire. But couldn't melt that peanut butter sandwich. With ropes and pulleys, drills and coil, with steam and lubricating oil, for 20 years of tears and toil, they fought that awful peanut butter sandwich. And then all his royal subjects came. They hooked his jaws with grappling chains and pulled both ways with might and main against that stubborn peanut butter sandwich. Each man and woman, girl and boy, put down their plows and pots and toys and pulled until crack.
Oh, joy. They broke right through. Peanut butter sandwich. A puff of dust. A screech. A squeak. The king's jaws opened with a creak. And then, in voice so faint and weak, the first words that they heard him speak were, how about a peanut butter sandwich?
Listen to the mustn'ts, child. Listen to the don'ts. Listen to the shouldn'ts, the impossibles, the won'ts. Listen to the never haves. Then listen close to me. Anything can happen, child. Anything can be.
I will not play at tug-of-war. I'd rather play at hug-of-war, where everyone hugs instead of tugs, and where everyone giggles and rolls on the rug, and where everyone kisses and everyone grins and everyone cuddles and everyone wins. My dad gave me a dollar bill, 'cause I'm his smartest son, and I swapped it to Mort for 2 shiny quarters, 'cause 2 is more than 1. And then I took the 2 quarters and I traded them to Lou for 3 dimes. I guess he don't know that 3 is more than 2. And then just along come old blind Bates. And just 'cause he can't see, he gave me 4 nickels for my 3 dimes. 4 is more than 3. And then I took the nickels to Hiram Coombs down at the seed feed store, and the fool gave me 5 pennies for them. 5 is more than 4. And then I went and showed my dad. He got red in the cheeks and closed his eyes and shook his head, too proud of me to speak. Once I spoke the language of the flowers. Once I understood each word the caterpillar said. Once I smiled in secret at the gossip of the starlings and shared a conversation with the housefly on my bed. Once I heard and answered all the questions of the crickets and joined the crying of each falling, dying flake of snow. Once I spoke the language of the flowers. How did it go? How did it go?
She's coming, the farmer said to the owl. What shall I do? Shall I bow when she comes? Shall I twiddle my thumbs? The owl asked.
Who? Who?
The queen, the royal queen. She'll pass the farm today. Shall I salute? He asked the horse. The horse said, Nay. Shall I give her a gift, he asked the wren, a memento for her to keep, an egg or a peach or an ear of corn? The wren said, cheap. But should I curtsy or should I cheer? Oh, here is her carriage now. What shall I do, he asked the dog. The dog said, bow. And so he did, and so she passed. Oh, tra-la-la-la-la. She smiled, she did. He told the sheep. The sheep said,
Bah.
You should have heard the old men cry. You should have heard the biddies when that sad stranger raised his flute and piped away the kiddies. Katie, Tommy, Meg, and Bob followed skipping gaily. Red-haired Ruth, and my brother Rob, and little cripple Bailey. John, and Nils, and cousin Claire. Dancing, spinning, turning, across the hills to God knows where they never came returning. Across the hills to God knows where the piper pranced, a-leading each child in Hamelin Town but me. And I stayed home, unheeding. My papa says that I was blessed, for if that music found me, I'd be witchcast like all the rest. This town grows old around me. I cannot say I did not hear that sound so haunting, hollow. I heard it clear. I was afraid to follow.
Small as a peanut, big as a giant, we're all the same size when you turn off the light. Rich as a sultan or poor as a mite, we're all worth the same when we turn off the light. Red, black, or orange, yellow or white, we all look the same when you turn off the light. So maybe the way to make everything right is for God to just reach out and turn off the light.
If you tell me the wild boar has 20 teeth, I'll say, why sure. Or say that he has 33. That number's quite all right with me. Or scream that he has 99. I'll never say that you are lying. For the number of teeth in a wild boar's mouth is a subject I'm glad I know nothing about. The thumbsucker's thumb may look wrinkled and wet and withered and white as the snow, but the taste of a thumb is the sweetest taste yet, as only we thumbsuckers know.
Sarah Cynthia Sylvia Stout would not take the garbage out. She'd scour the pots and scrape the pans, candy the yams and spice the hams, and though her daddy would scream and shout, she simply would not take the garbage out. And so it piled up to the ceilings. Coffee grounds and potato peelings. Brown bananas, rotten peas, chunks of sour cottage cheese. It filled the can, it covered the floor, it cracked the window, it blocked the door with bacon rinds and chicken bones. Drippy ends of ice cream cones, prune pits, peach pits, orange peel, gloppy glumps of cold oatmeal and pizza crusts and withered greens and soggy beans and tangerines and crusts of blackburn butter toast and grisly bits of beefy roasts. The garbage rolled on down the hall. It raised the roof. It broke the wall. I mean, greasy napkins, cookie crumbs, globs of gooey bubble gum and cellophane from green bologna, rubbery blubbery macaroni, peanut butter, cake and dry, curdled milk and crust of pie, moldy melons, dried up mustard, eggshells mixed with lemon custard, cold french fries and rancid meat and yellow lumps of cream of wheat. At last, the garbage reached so high that finally it touched the sky, and all the neighbors moved away, and none of her friends had come to play, and finally, Sarah Cynthia Stout said, "Okay, I'll take the garbage out." But then, of course, it was too late. The garbage reached across the state from New York to the Golden Gate. And there in the garbage she did hate. Poor Sarah met an awful fate that I cannot right now relate, because the hour is much too late. But children, remember Sarah Stout, and always take the garbage out.
When you spit from the 26th floor and it floats on the breeze to the ground, does it fall upon hats or on white Persian cats? Or on heads with a pity pat sound? I used to think life was a bore, but I don't feel that way anymore. As I count up the hits, as I smile and I sit, and I spit from the 26th floor. La 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 chapoo, de la la chapoo.
If you're a bird, be an early bird and catch the worm for your breakfast plate. If you're a bird, be an early, early bird. But if you're a worm, sleep late.
I have nothing to put in my stew, you see. Not a bone, or a bean, or a black-eyed pea. So I'll just climb in the pot to see if I can make a stew out of me. I'll put in some pepper and salt, and I'll sit in the bubbling water. I won't scream a bit. I'll sing while I simmer. I'll smile while I'm stewing. I'll taste myself often to see how I'm doing. I'll stir me around with this big wooden spoon, and I'll serve myself up at a quarter to noon. So bring out your stew bowls, you gobblers and snackers. Farewell, and I hope you enjoy me with crackers.
Thank you.
Captain Hook must remember not to scratch his toes. Captain Hook must watch out and never pick his nose. Captain Hook must be gentle when he shakes your hand. And Captain Hook must be careful opening sardine cans and playing tag, pouring tea, turning pages of a book. Lots of folks I'm glad I'm not, but mostly Captain Hook.
Milfred Dupree, though he knew it was rude, talked with his mouth full of food. He never would burp or walk out in the nude, but he talked with his mouth full of food. His mother said, "Milfred, it's crude and it's lewd to talk with your mouth full of food. Why, even the milk cow who mooed as she chewed never mooed with her mouth full of food. And the cuckoo would never have ever cuckooed if he cooed with his mouth full of food." His dad said, "Get married or go get tattooed, but don't talk with your mouth full of food. If it was a crime, you would surely get sued if you talked with your mouth full of food. Why, just like an animal, you should be zooed as you talk with your mouth full of food, 'cause you know we're all put in a terrible mood when you talk with your mouth full of food." They pleaded. They begged. He just giggled and chewed and laughed with his mouth full of food. And all they advised him, he simply poo-pooed. He poo-pooed with his mouth full of food. Poo-poo. So they sent for the gluer that had his mouth glued, 'cause he talked with his mouth full of food. And now instead of good morning, he said, "Poo-poo."
"Oh, I'm going to ride on the flying festoon. I'll jump on his back and I'll whistle a tune. And we'll fly to the outermost tip of the moon. The flying festoon and I'm taking a sandwich, a ball, and a prune. And we're leaving this evening, precisely at noon, 'cause I'm going to fly with the flying festoon."
Just as soon as he learns how to fly.
While fishing in the Blue Lagoon, I caught a lovely silver fish, and he spoke to me. "My boy," quote he, "please set me free and I'll grant your wish. A kingdom of wisdom, a palace of gold, or all of the goodies your fancies can hold." So I said, "Okay," and I threw him free and he swam away and he laughed at me, whispering my foolish wish into a silent sea. Today, I caught that fish again, that lovely silver prince of fishes, and once again, he offered me, if I would only set him free, any one of a number of wonderful wishes. He was delicious.
Said General Clay to General Gore, "Oh, must we fight this silly war? To kill and die is such a bore."
"I quite agree," said General Gore.
Said General Gore to General Clay, "We could go to the beach today and have some ice cream on the way."
"A grand idea," said General Clay.
Said General Clay to General Gore, "We'll build sandcastles on the shore." Said General Gore, "We'll splash and play.
Let's leave right now," said General Clay.
Said General Gore to General Clay, "But what if the sea is closed today?" And what if the sand's been blown away?
Dreadful thought, said General Clay.
Said General Gore to General Clay, I've always feared the ocean spray, and we may drown.
It's true. We may. It chills my blood, said General Clay.
Said General Clay to General Gore, my bathing suit is slightly tore.
We'd better go on with our war.
I quite agree, said General Gore.
Then General Clay charged General Gore as bullets flew and cannons roared. And now, alas, there is no more of General Clay or General Gore.
When singing songs of scariness, of bloodiness and hairiness, I feel obligated at this moment to remind you of the most ferocious beast of all, 3,000 pounds and 9 feet tall, the Glurpy Sclurpy Squagglegug
that's standing right behind you. Someone ate the baby. It's rather sad to say, someone ate the baby, so she won't be out to play. We'll never hear her whiny cry or have to feel if she is dry. We'll never hear her asking why. Someone ate the baby. Someone ate the baby. It is absolutely clear someone ate the baby because the baby isn't here. We'll give away her toys and clothes. We'll never have to wipe her nose. Dad says, that's the way it goes. Someone ate the baby. Someone ate the baby. What a frightful thing to eat. Someone ate the baby, though she wasn't very sweet. It was a heartless thing to do. The policemen haven't got a clue. They simply can't imagine who would go and eat the baby.
My beard grows to my toes. I never wears no clothes. I wraps my hair around my bear and down the road I goes. La 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 lum pa pum pa pum pa pum pa pum pum. La 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 lum pi dum pi do de da da la lum pa dum pi de da 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 da.
The little blue engine looked up at the hill. His light was weak, his whistle was shrill. He was tired and small, and the hill was tall. And his face blushed red as he softly said, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. So he started up with a chug and a strain, and he puffed and he pulled with might and main, and slowly he climbed a foot at a time, and his engine coughed as he whispered soft, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. With a squeak and a creak and a toot and a sigh, with an extra hope and an extra try, he would not stop. And now he neared the top, and strong and proud, he cried out loud, I think I can, I think I can, I think I can. He was almost there when crash, smash, bash, he slid down and smashed into engine hash on the rocks below, which goes to show, though you may be tough, if the hill is rough, thinking you can just ain't enough. If I had a brontosaurus, I would name him Horace or Morris. But if suddenly one day he had a lot of little brontosauri, I would change his name to Laurie. If you were only 1 inch tall, you'd ride a worm to school. The teardrop of a crying ant would be a swimming pool for you. A crumb of cake would be a feast and last you 7 days at least. A flea would be a frightening beast if you was 1 inch tall. If you were only 1 inch tall, you'd walk beneath the door, and it would take about a month to get down to the store.
A bit of fluff would be your bed. You'd swing upon a spider's thread and wear a thimble on your head if you were 1 inch tall. You'd surf across the kitchen sink upon a stick of gum. You couldn't hug your mama. You'd just have to hug her thumb. You'd run from people's feet in fright. To move a pen would take all night. This poem took 14 years to write. Because I'm just 1 inch tall. There was a boy in our town with long hair. I mean, really long hair. So everybody pointed at him and laughed at him and made fun of him and stare. And when he walked down the street, people would roar and stick out their tongues and make funny faces and run in and slam the door and shout at him from the windows till he couldn't stand it anymore. So he sat down and cried, trying to cover his hair so no one would look. He sighed till his whole body shook, and pretty soon his hair shook too. And it flapped and flapped, and he lifted and it flew straight up in the air like a helicopter. Jenny Rick saw him and dropped her knitting and screamed, "It's a flying kid!" Lukeski Hastings run and hid under old man Merrill's car. Miss Terrence fainted. Henry Quist tried to shoot him down but missed. "Thought it was a crow," he said. And round he sailed all through the day, smiling in the strangest way, with the wind in his hair and the sun in his eyes. We saw him swoop and bank and rise. He brushed the treetops, skimmed the grass on Yerby's lawn, almost crashed right into Hanson's silo, but zoomed up again and almost hit the courthouse. Old man Cooley bit right through his napkin when he saw a kid fly through the diner door and out the window, tipping the ladder where Smokey was painting. He almost had a heart attack. He clung to the rafter. The kid flew on, us running after him, cheering and screaming and shouting, "Hooray!" And Mayor Lowry shouted, "Hey, come down here, kid. We'd like to say how proud of you we are today. Whoever thought our little town would have a hero in it? And so I'd like to proclaim this day. Hey, kid, will you come down for just a minute?" But the kid did not come down. He treaded air above the ground, flapping his hair and looking down at all of us here on the ground. And then he flew up into the clouds, flapping and flying so far and high, out past the hills and up into the sky, until a tiny speck against the sun was all we could see of him, and he was gone. I opened my eyes and looked up at the rain, and it dripped in my head and poured into my brain. So pardon the wild, crazy thing I just said. I just ain't the same since there's rain in my head. I walk kind of careful. I turn around slow. I can't run or jump 'cause I might overflow. And all that I hear as I lie in my bed is the slish, shitty, slosh. The rain in my head. This morning I jumped on my horse and went out for a ride, and some wild Indians chased me and they shot me in the side. So I crawled into a wildcat's den to find a place to hide. But some bandits found me sleeping, and soon they had me tied to a post and built a fire. Under me I almost cried, till a mermaid came and cut me loose and begged to be my bride. So I said I'd come back Wednesday, but I must admit I lied, 'cause I ran into a jungle swamp. But I forgot my guide and I stepped into some quicksand, and no matter how I tried I couldn't get out, until I met a water snake named Clyde, who pulled me to some cannibals to have plant to have me fried. But an eagle came and swooped me up, and through the air we flied, and he dropped me in a chocolate lake that was 1,000 miles wide. And you'll never guess what I did then. I died. Hungry Mungry sat at supper, took his knife and spoon and fork, ate a bowl of mushroom soup, ate a slice of roasted pork, ate a dozen stewed tomatoes, 27 deviled eggs, 15 shrimp, 9 baked potatoes, 32 fried chicken legs, shank of lamb, boiled ham, 2 bowls of grits, some black-eyed peas, 4 chocolate shakes, 8 angel cakes, 9 custard pies with Munster cheese, 10 pots of tea. And after he had eaten all that he was able, he poured some broth on a tablecloth and ate the kitchen table. Part 1. Part 2. His parents said, "Oh, Hungry Mungry,
Stop those silly jokes. Mungry opened up his mouth, and he ate his folks. And then he went and ate his house and chewed the bricks and wood. And then he ate up all the people in the neighborhood. And up came 20 angry policemen shouting, "Stop and cease." Mungry opened up his mouth and he ate the police. Soldiers came with tanks and guns. Said Mungry, "They can't harm me." He smiled, and then he licked his chops, and he ate the U.S. Army. The president sent all his bombers. Mungry still was calm, put his head back, gulped the planes, and gobbled up the bomb. He ate the town and ate the city, ate and ate and ate, and then he said, "I think I'll eat the whole United States." And so he ate Chicago first and munched the water tower. And then he chewed on Pittsburgh, but he found it rather sour. He ate New York and Tennessee and all of Boston town, and then he drank the Mississippi just to wash it down. And then, once he'd eaten every state, each puppy, boy, and girl, he wiped his mouth upon his sleeve and went to eat the world. There's something for you. He ate the Egypt pyramids and every church in Rome and all the grass in Africa and all the ice in Nome. Oh, he ate each hill in green Brazil. And then, to make things worse, he decided for the dessert he would eat the universe. He started with the moon and stars, and soon as he was done, he gobbled up the clouds and sipped the wind and chopped the sun. And sitting there in the cold, dark air, he started to nibble his feet until nothing was left but the sound of a nothing was left to eat. Standing on my elbow with my finger in my ear, biting on a dandelion and humming kind of queer, while I watched a yellow caterpillar climbing up my wrist, I leaned on a tree and I said to me, "Why am I doing this?" If a world was crazy, you know what I'd eat? Big slice of soup, whole quarter meat, lemonade sandwich. Then I might try some roasted ice cream or bicycle pie, a nice notebook salad or some underwear roast, an omelet of hats and some crispy cardboard toast, a thick malted milk made from pencils and daisies, and that's what I'd eat if the world was crazy. If the world was crazy, you know what I'd wear? A chocolate suit and a tie of eclair, some marshmallow earmuffs, some licorice shoes, and I'd read a paper of peppermint news. I'd call the boys Susie, I'd call the girls Harry. I'd talk through my ears, and I always would carry a paper umbrella for when it grew hazy to keep in the rain. If the world was crazy. If the world was crazy, you know what I'd do? I'd walk on the ocean and swim in my shoe. I'd fly through the ground and I'd skip down the air. I'd run down the bathtub and bathe on the stair. When I'd meet somebody, I'd say, "Goodbye, Joe." And when I was leaving, then I'd say, "Hello." And the greatest of men would be silly and lazy. So I would be king if the world was crazy. Hector, the collector, collected bits of string. He collected dolls with broken heads and collected rusty bells that wouldn't ring and pieces out of picture puzzles and bent up nails and ice cream sticks and twists of wires and worn out tires and paper bags and broken bricks and old chip vases and half shoelaces and Gatling guns that wouldn't shoot. He had a couple leaky boats that wouldn't float and stopped up horns that wouldn't toot and butter knives that had no handles, copper keys that fit no locks, rings that were too small for fingers and dried up leaves and holy socks and worn out belts that had no buckles, electric trains had no tracks, airplane models and broken bottles and three-legged chairs and cups with cracks. Hector, the collector, he loved these things with all his soul. Loved them more than shining diamonds. Loved them more than glistening gold. And Hector, he called all the people, "Come and share my treasure trunk." And all the silly, sightless people looked at it and called it junk. Spaghetti all over the place. Up to my elbows, up to my face, over the carpet, under the chairs, into the hammock, wound round the stairs, filling the bathtub, covering the desk, making the sofa a mad, mushy mess. The party is ruined. I'm terribly worried. The guests have all left, unless they're all buried. I told them, bring presents. I said, throw confetti. I guess they heard me wrong. They all threw spaghetti.